This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. It's time to look at the top business stories of the day. We begin with the Digital Free Trade Zone, a project that has started to gain momentum with initial numbers out on a pilot project and Malaysian Airlines announcing a joint venture with Alibaba's logistics arm, Cainiao Smart Logistics Network.
Is he saying that correctly, Han?
I think it's Cainiao.
Cainiao. Yeah. All right. Okay, so Malaysian Airports and Cainiao Smart Logistics, they're going to invest 800 million ringgit, and they're going to build all sorts of infrastructure and facilities for this KLIA Aeropolis Digital Free Trade Zone. This is going to be on 32 hectares, and apparently it's on track now for a handover in August, and expected to be operational within 2 years.
Okay. Well, MAHB Managing Director Dato' Badli Sham Ghazali says the company is looking to develop another 1 million square feet of gross floor area for cargo facilities within the next 3 years.
We have a lot of other land bank here. We are talking to other new players, both e-commerce players and other cargo operators to come into Malaysia, whether it's for 50 or 100 acres of investments. That's something that we are already discussing with them, but we'll make the appropriate announcement as we go along. This whole area that is to be developed for cargo and logistics, not just for Alibaba, is to generate something like 18,000 jobs. Yeah? People will be working in this area just for cargo and logistics over the next 10 years.
That was MHB Managing Director Dato' Badli Sham Ghazali.
Now, just to kind of get this in there, I know it's a bit of a cheap shot, but I'll just do it anyways. Look, you know how in Pakatan's manifesto they talk about trying to review all of these Chinese investments in Malaysia. I wonder if they'll review this one if they get into Putrajaya as well, this tie up with Cainiao/Alibaba.
Well, I think the issue of review, I think, is very important. We talked about, and if you listened to the grill yesterday with the ambassador, the European ambassador, they're saying when they talk to China, who they see as a partner, their thing is follow the rules, be fair, and be inclusive. And that's all that Europe wants in negotiating with China. Mm. No reason why Malaysia can't have the same. I think what the federal opposition is saying is that that part of that discussion hasn't happened with many of the deals, not all of the deals that have happened, especially with state-owned enterprises from China and such, and the big infrastructure projects.
I think that's really important, bringing up the state-owned enterprises, Sharad, because China is no ordinary investor. You're not talking about private investment just as private investment. You're talking about private investment with strings attached because of the SOEs. And I think, so there's been a lot of concern about this, and that's a whole other ball game. It's a whole other topic that we can discuss. But coming back to Alibaba, just being here and kind of being a huge partner in the DFTZ, they've got a huge advantage in terms of the Malaysian e-commerce ecosystem.
Yeah, so it looks like they're taking it up, end-to-end, right, solutions. So you've got Alibaba obviously here in the mobile payment space, obviously with the Alibaba platform as well, now logistics as well. And then when it comes to the last mile, you've got Post Malaysia, who's set to leverage on those opportunities. Now, last night when this announcement was made, I was kind of checking out Alibaba's website, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't talk about, say, leveraging up for Malaysian or the kind of opportunities that are presented to Malaysian SMEs, there is a malaysia.alibaba.com. So there's this whole Made in Pavilion Malaysia page where you can get like 120 chairs or 500 types of soybean powder or something. Yeah. So it's like all these bulk goods that you can buy in bulk that are made in Malaysia that's made available on the Alibaba platform.
Your shopping cart must be so weird that you're looking at chairs and soybean powder.
I cannot confirm, no.
120, you're having a big party.
Okay, so the question is, are you saying that perhaps Alibaba may have an unfair advantage over other platforms? Because, I think the MITI minister did say, Dato' Sri Mustafa Muhammad Topa, that is, he did say it's not going to be limited to the Alibaba.com platform. There's going to be Amazon and eBay and all that involved, and even local e-marketplaces like Aladdin Street and Dagang Halal and Buy Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Yeah, but let's face it, those guys are not quite Alibaba, are not quite tiny, right? It's a kind of scale. And do you really want to go up against the kind of Alibaba or find those synergies that can be had? Mm-hmm. So you've got the announcement that over 2,600 SMEs have now participated in this Digital Free Trade Zone SME onboarding program. So that's Malaysian opportunities that Malaysian SMEs can hopefully leverage on, and hopefully more opportunities will come online that can benefit more Malaysian SMEs.
Now, if you want to learn more about partnering up in the DFTZ and big data with and these are issues that concern you, you should come to the Enterprise Rocks event that's going to happen on the 8th of May. This is happening at Nexus at Connection in Bangsar South. You can go to bfm.my/rocks. That's R-O-C-K-S, rocks. And learn all about the DFTZ there. Okay? Now, let's move on to the next story. It's an issue that affects all Selangorians, the people who live in the Klang Valley, and that's the question of water. Gamuda Splash is suing Shabazz for 4.22 billion ringgit in unpaid invoices.
Right. So Splash is saying that Shabazz hasn't been paying their bills in full. And to collect this outstanding amount, they're suing Shabazz. And the reason is Splash is saying that they don't have enough money to pay their TNB bill, their Tenaga bill. If they don't have enough money to pay their Tenaga bill, then that could result in water cuts for people living in Selangor. So at the end of the day, I mean, is it difficult to understand this convoluted? It's been happening for a while now, Han. But essentially, the two players here would be Splash and Shabazz, right?
Actually, well, you've got three players. You've got the federal government, the state government, i.e. Shabazz, and then you got Splash, which 40% of which is owned by Gamuda. Okay, so three guys there. So before we came on air, I just spoke to a spokesperson for the Selangor State Government, although they're in caretaker mode right now. But still, another thank you very much, dear gentlemen, for taking the call. So yes, it is a very, very convoluted argument. Essentially, the Selangor State Government is paying only 36% of their water bills. Okay, so they're not paying the full amount. So Splash is saying that, hey, because you're not paying us the full amount, we can't pay TNB and all that stuff. Now, to get the Selangor State Government side of the story, they're saying, you know, the concession that was awarded to those guys, you know, way back in the day, it's unfair. So you know, we are holding out on the full payment. We are only going to pay you 36%. There's a lot of wrangling going on between the federal government, state government, and Shabazz. Ultimately, you know, it comes down to the valuation of Splash. And then also, once the valuation is determined by both the state and federal governments, then how much will either side, the two buyers, Selangor and the federal government, how much are they willing to chip in at that predetermined valuation,
the
price tag.
So that's the price of Splash, yeah? So Shabazz looking to, Pengurusan IA Selangor looking to buy over Splash. But I don't understand why Shabazz is only paying a third of its bill to Splash. That for me is quite mind-boggling.
Right, so again, the idea is that, you know, as opposed to paying all 100%, it could recognize what is perceived as a lopsided deal that that Splash got in the first place way back then. On top of that, if they were to pay the 100%, that could translate into higher water tariffs for the folks in Selangor. So that is seen as an explosive topic, especially leading up to G14.
Sure.
Nobody wants to risk that, right?
Well, also interesting is because Barisan Nasional Selangor has the issue of water management as one of their central platforms. And I wonder if it's going to play badly for the incumbent government, the incumbent parties, as it were, in Selangor, because much capital has been made against Pakatan on the basis of the failure to reach an agreement on water.
Okay.
The question, of course, is do people experience that on a daily basis? We had that blowout on that valve. It was a couple of days of bucket carrying. But beyond that, have people felt that they have suffered as a consequence?
Oh, heck yeah. But then, you know, I think fundamentally, right, do the customers in Selangor, do they care about the rationale for withholding the payments?
Right.
Right. Because ultimately, net-net, what's the end result? You've got folks in Selangor waiting in line, having, you know, to to wait, get their water from the tanker as opposed to having it from their homes, right? So whatever the justification, and here's my point of contention, whatever the justification that the Selangor State government sees or whatever rationale that they can come up with for withholding the payment, will that fly by the Selangor State government? You've had the Penang State government, they have sorted their water rationalizing exercise, right? So now it could be seen as, you know, politics getting in the way of a basic need here, that right. is the water of Selangor. Now, Selangor has the money. They have the money, okay?
Are you sure, Han?
Because I've been told.
That for me, so the when I read that, okay, they're only paying a third of their water bill, I'm thinking, well, don't they have money to pay the full bill?
So I just spoke to the spokesperson for the Selangor State government. They have the money. They have the cash reserves. They have the means too, okay? It's just the lack of willingness, right? If you do Econs 101...
It's a part of a negotiating gambit, right? So the idea is that you don't pay so that you don't recognize, so then there's more pressure on the other side to come to the negotiating table and perhaps some middle ground can be found.
Right, that's the idea. But in the meantime, right, you know... Are the folks in Selangor just seen as
you know,
like,
I haven't had a water cut in all these months. So
I have.
You have.
The good folks in Klang, Sharad Kutin, you know, it comes down to the grassroots level.
Jaya.
Well, I'm Subang, but also the good folks in Klang and Shalam, you ask those folks, are they willing to put up with this?
Okay. And they'll have their day in court.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, it's in the polling booth. Now, let's move on to news that Genting Singapore plans to bid for a gaming license in Japan. The group said Genting Singapore continues to be engaged in business opportunities and was diligently preparing for an eventual bidding process. Genting is optimistic that the Japan Integrated Resort Execution Bill will be tabled in this year's Diet session that will pave the way for Genting formal bid for a gaming license.
Yeah, this is a very interesting development in Japan, especially for the likes of Genting and all these other casino operators, right? Japan, traditionally a conservative society, there has been some pushback when it comes to these kind of casinos because they fear, say, personal debt or the addiction to gambling or all these kind of vices, right? So they have this kind of fear. But then you've got Shinzo Abe and his administration, as well as his coalition partners, who are now perhaps looking to liberalize the gaming industry over there. So question is, could Genting be one of the key beneficiaries to that move by the RBA administration?
Yeah, so Nomura had a note to clients, I think it was earlier this month, and they reckon that the casino law in Japan will likely be passed in at the earliest in the second half. And they're saying, look, you know, this is going to be interesting because they spoke to some local sources and there are four main locations that are being discussed for the initial phase of perhaps up to three casino resorts. So they're looking at Osaka, Yokohama, Nagasaki and Hokkaido, which is in the northern part. So this is quite interesting because, you know, guys, in Japan, I mean, the stakes are high, pardon the pun, because... If this does go through, that means that whoever wins, you know, the winning bidders will really have a huge access, a first entry, especially to a huge market. We're talking about, you know, perhaps exceeding Las Vegas, even or Macau, even Singapore as a hub or a tourist destination.
Yeah. Well, and also keep in mind that this, you know, if this actually pans out for Genting, this would broaden their global presence, right? They're already in, obviously, Malaysia, Singapore, New York, Vegas, Birmingham, Manila, the Bahamas, right? And as well as several other smaller locations across Malaysia as well. So, you know, if you add Japan, the world's third largest economy, to the mix, what does this mean for Genting? Right?
Well, also, Han, you know, you were just talking to Joe Quinlan a little earlier. Talking about how President Xi Jinping, China, is going to be visiting Hainan, right?
Right. And, you know, one of the talks was that, well, no, Hainan. Actually, I think my ancestors are from Hainan.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure. I think I'm from Hainan Lang. I think so. I don't know. I've got to check my parents again. Anyway, so one of the they are being touted as the Hawaii of the East, although they're not quite there yet.
Now, no, that was used to be Penang. Penang used to be the Hawaii of the East.
Oh. Well, okay. Anyway, back to Hainan. Yeah, back to Hainan.
Back to Hainan.
Back to my mother.
It was the pearl of the East.
Yeah, but anyway, so one of the talks of about Hainan, especially in light of President Xi Jinping's visit to Hainan Island later today, is, you know, they are looking for any signs that they could open up the gaming industry on that island as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a very pragmatic issue for a lot of governments that are looking at developing their economies or creating jobs or, in fact, getting revenues. It is the the troubling aspects of gaming, right? So the issues of addiction. I think Singapore went through this very public process of discussing the consequence and whether the economic justifications of gaming were trumped the problems that might come from, say, gambling addictions.
Mm. Well, not just economic gains, but also allowing people to have some kind of outlet for their vices, right?
Well, you know, in Japan, that game, was it pachinko, is quite big, isn't it, in Japan? But gambling addiction is a serious issue.
And Japan does have, like, boat races and stuff in which people bet, right? Right. It's not like there isn't any gaming in Japan.
Right, yeah. That's true. But so far, I think the discussions in terms of a restriction for local gamblers there have revolved around having an entrance fee for Japanese citizens and also a cap. They're going to put a cap of visits per month. I think it's about 10. So all of that is restrictions into place for local gamers.
Yeah, I guess for some of us, we'd like to believe that our vices are our own and the state should not be meddling in our vices.
Anything you have to admit there, Sharad?
Yeah, I'm a libertarian, don't you know? Okay, tell us what you think. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. We have the news coming up and then we'll be returning with a look at the stock market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.